ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
More than 50 years ago, an American sociologist published a game-changing paper that illustrated just how critical casual acquaintances are in our work lives. This episode, The Strength of Weak Ties and How to Cultivate Them. Hello, Lisa Leong here for This Work in Life, helping to make your work life better. In this episode, we'll share techniques to help you build authentic connections, and we'll explain how cultivating weak ties is a vital way to do this. How have you used weak ties to boost your career? You can email thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Mark Granovetter is a Professor of Sociology Emeritus at Stanford University. Back in 1973, the American Journal of Sociology published his paper called The Strength of Weak Ties. His theory changed the way we think about networking forever. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you for your kind welcome.
Can you tell us about the Strength of Weak Ties theory for those who might not have heard of it? What are weak ties, especially in the context of work?
I think a weak tie is more or less what we would think of when we say that someone is an acquaintance rather than a friend or a close friend. And when I did my study, so I did my doctoral dissertation on how people find jobs. And so I would talk to people and I would go through their story about how they found the job that they're in. And they would say something like, so-and-so helped me find this job. They told me all about it and they put in a good word for me. And then I would say, I see, so your friend so-and-so helped you. And then over and over again, people would correct me and say, oh, no, not a friend, really, just an acquaintance.
Why do you think, Mark, it was so surprising that weak ties were so critical in the workplace?
I think it's one of these things that isn't surprising once you hear about it, because it's the kind of thing that people say, oh, yes, of course. I must have known that. Why didn't I think of that? Or why didn't I write this paper? Because once I explain what is so interesting about weak ties, people immediately see it. I was lucky to be the first one to put it on paper, I suppose. And not really the first one, because there are some very technical papers on networks that appeared in journals like the Bulletin of Mathematical Biophysics. And there was a paper in that journal that talked about the strength of ties, where they got kids in a junior high school, a middle school in Ann Arbor, Michigan. They got them to fill out a questionnaire. They wanted each of the kids to name their 8 best friends in order. First best friend, second best friend, third best friend, so on and so forth, up to 8th best friend. So by the time you get to 7th and 8th best friend, you're not talking about strong ties, most likely. You're talking about weaker ties. And then they plotted on a graph, if you go through everybody's first and second best friends, how many people do you reach if you do that for everybody? If you go through their third and fourth best friends and so on, up to 7th and 8th best friends. And it turned out that you reach many more people through 7th and 8th best friends than you do through first and second best friends. And the reason is that if you think about your first and second best friends and you think about their first and second best friends and then their first and second best friends, that's a network that's going to fold in on itself, because the people that your best friends know are going to be the same people that you know, and that their best friends will be your best friends. And you eventually, the network kind of closes up. Whereas if you look at people who are your 7th and 8th best friends that you don't know very well, well, they know people and they have friends that you don't know or you're not acquainted with. And that's the strength of weak ties, because if you are talking to people and you'd like to find out stuff that you don't already know, like, where are the jobs available, then you want to talk to people who are talking to people you don't already know, because then you'll find out stuff you didn't know before. And so that's the strength of weak ties. And it turns out that there's a lot of studies now. I think mine was one of the earliest ones, but not the very earliest ones, to find that people find jobs through acquaintances more than they do through close friends, which is what the people in my survey were telling me.
And Mark, I can see that this would also apply not just to securing new jobs, but maybe even promotions and good projects within an organisation as well. So not just relying on your team, but maybe the acquaintances in your workplace.
Certainly in a large organisation, it is helpful to be able to reach out to and get feedback from people that you're not already acquainted with. You know, if the organization is small enough, then you know everybody. But in any large organization, and a lot of people work in large organizations, certainly in the States and probably in Australia as well, then there are going to be a lot of people you don't really know. Those people you can reach through your acquaintances. So one of the things I wanted to say, wanted to tell you that I thought was interesting was that when I read this paper in the Bulletin of Mathematical Biophysics, and they did this graph and showed that you can reach a much larger number of people if you go through people's seventh and eighth best friends than through the first and second. And the authors said, and it was almost like a throwaway comment, that this is because the well-known fact that you reach more people through weak ties than through strong ties. Well, it may have been well known to them, but it wasn't well known to anybody else. Nobody had really written a paper talking about this. And I thought to myself, well, this is interesting. These guys say that this is obvious, and yet they don't understand how important it is. They think it's just something about the mathematics of networks. And it's actually much more important than that, because there are so many ways that people can use their weak ties or their acquaintances to get information that is valuable to them, like information about new jobs that they could find, new ideas they have for experiments in their laboratory, more likely to come through their weak ties.
Mark, just to clarify my understanding, so are you saying that the power of information is exponential or compounded through weak ties?
I'm saying you get information through weak ties that you would never get if you only talk to your good friends. Because the people who are your weak ties, they know people you don't know. And if you look at their acquaintances, their acquaintances know people that they don't know. And so when you talk to your weak ties, you're getting access to a much, much larger network than you would have access to if you only talk to your best friends, your close friends. They might be really interested in helping you find a job, but they don't. What they know is it's the same thing you know. So you want to talk to people who know things you don't know, whether it's finding a job or getting a new idea for an experiment or whatever it is. If you want new ideas, you'd better get out of your small circle of close friends and talk to your acquaintances, because that is the strength of weak ties. And it turned out to be a very good title, because in that title is almost the whole story. People immediately understand it. It was a very successful title. The first version I wrote of that paper was rejected. And I think one reason it was rejected is that the strength of weak ties was only a subtitle. The actual title was Alienation Reconsidered. And I wrote a paper about how people who live in big cities are not really alienated because they have so many ties, and the weak ties are very important to them, and so on. So I talked about that, but the journal I sent it to sent the paper to people who were probably Marxist alienation theorists, and they didn't quite say this, but I think what they were thinking when they rejected the paper was that this is not really what Marx meant by alienation. This is something entirely different. And so the paper was rejected. I was unhappy that it was rejected. I was still a graduate student. I was 25. And so I put it aside for a while. And then when I decided to rewrite it and resubmit it to a different journal, I took the word alienation out of the title, and I took it out of every place I could find it in the paper. And that worked. It went through one round of revision, and then the journal accepted it. It came out, as you said, in 1973. You know, it's a funny thing about papers that you publish. You know pretty quickly whether they're successful or not. If you publish a paper and you never hear anything from anybody about it, then you can guess that it's not making a big splash. If you publish a paper and all of a sudden you start getting correspondence about it and you hear people referring to it in their lectures and so on, then you know that there's something going on there. And that's what happened with The Strength of Weak Ties. As soon as it was published, I started getting letters from people at other universities saying how interesting that they're talking about it in their seminars. The president of the American Sociological Association gives a presidential address every year. There's a new president. And that year, the president of the association talked about my paper in his address. I was really kind of gobsmacked by that, but pleasantly surprised, of course. But I still never imagined that it would have the number of citations it does. And I'll tell you, the sad thing is that unlike musicians who, when they record a record, record a song, and it's played on the radio, every time it's played, they get
a royalty.
They get a royalty, right? When your paper is cited, you get nothing. You get, well, I suppose you're getting a bit of recognition, but you can't really take that to the bank.
But you have a wealth in terms of a wealth of knowledge and a wealth of people sending you goodwill for the amount of impact that you've had on the world. I came across your work through COVID. We were working remotely, no ability really to cultivate face-to-face those weak ties because we were only dealing with our direct reports or our direct managers. And so I came across the concept, your concept of weak ties, and I was just so fascinated and thinking, oh no, none of us are cultivating weak ties. So I would love you to reflect on what has happened to those weak ties and what have we done to cultivate them maybe in a different way?
One thing that is interesting is that even though people couldn't see their weak ties in person anymore, not unless they lived very close by, they could still keep up their close friends, but more importantly, keep up their acquaintances through a whole series of computer-assisted developments. All these online ways for people to meet their friends, but keep up with their acquaintances. When I just decided what I wanted to do my doctoral dissertation on, I knew I wanted to do it on something that had to do with social networks. And so I had two possible subjects. One possible subject was to do a study of how people met their spouse or a significant other. And there was a lot of information at that time to the effect that most people met their spouses through friends of friends or spouses of friends or friends of spouses but through social networks. And the other thing I thought I might do my dissertation on was how people found jobs. Well, I did it on how people found jobs, and I published a book that came out in 1994, a second edition 1995, called Getting a Job. It's from the University of Chicago Press. It's interesting that I did that, and it turns out that in 2025, if you ask the question, how do people find spouses and how do people find jobs? In the old days, the answer to both questions was they did it through their social networks. That's no longer true. It turns out that now, the way most people find spouses, at least in the U.S., I don't know if it's also true in Australia, but there's research on this, they find their spouses online through OkCupid or Match.com or whatever the Australian equivalents are. And so that is so interesting that has changed. But if you want to know how do people find jobs, that has not changed. They still find jobs through social ties, especially through weak ties. It's interesting to think about why, and I have thought about why, and I've written a little bit about it. Employers actually are so eager to hire new employees through their social contacts that they actually pay their own employees bounties to bring in people they know for job openings that they have. So nothing like that happens. No one will pay a bounty to bring in someone to be your spouse, because that's just kind of odd. But the two ways of doing things have diverged. The spouses now, they meet each other online. Jobs still go through weak ties, especially since people can keep up so many weak ties, many more than they could before, on Facebook and on LinkedIn.
Mark, we actually have a listener here, Sue Elson, who's going to share how she cultivates her weak ties.
My career started in banking in Adelaide. When I moved to Melbourne and lost my next job because I was pregnant, I became self-employed. To survive, I've created a variety of networks. The initial personal networks were through local community groups, but after completing a degree by correspondence in the year 2000, I decided to keep learning, and I've been going to between 1 and 4 events every week since then. At every in-person event, I aim to talk to at least 3 people, and I invite them to connect with me on LinkedIn. For every online event, I invite each presenter to connect on LinkedIn. Most of my work opportunities come directly to me through these weak ties, and I often have people come up to me at an event and say that they remember meeting me years ago.
That was Sue Elson. Mark, what are your reflections on Sue?
It's very interesting how we have this memory of ties, people we haven't seen for years and years and years. If we suddenly run into them at an event like this, or in a store or something, and you haven't seen the person in 5 years or 10 years, it's just fascinating that people recognize each other in most cases. Each of them has done things that the other may not know about, but they still have a relationship, even after all those years. And they can almost go back to where they were and start again and resume the relationship. And so that is fascinating. Now, it's also true that people keep up their ties through, as I said, LinkedIn and Facebook and so on. And so people keep up more acquaintances than they could in the old days.
Mark, what makes a person an acquaintance? How do we cultivate those?
An acquaintance is someone who you know is not a close friend. They're not someone you're close to, but they're someone that you know and you exchange information with and you exchange favors with and you talk to and you enjoy spending some time with, but maybe not as much time as you spend with your close friends or your spouse. And most people, if you say, can you tell me who your close friends are and can you tell me who your acquaintances are? People don't have any trouble making two different lists. I could see that people really already had an idea about this, and they knew the difference between a friend and an acquaintance. I tried to take what they knew and what they were telling me and formulate that in a way that would be useful for social science and anyone who wanted to understand about strong ties and weak ties.
Thank you for that great discussion. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much.
Mark Granovetter is a professor of sociology emeritus at Stanford University. Wendy Dawson is president of the Melbourne Business Network. Welcome, Wendy.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It's great to be here.
How have weak ties played a role in your own career, Wendy?
Well, interestingly enough, I've just landed my next position starting on Monday through my own weak connections.
Say more.
It's a woman that I'm acquainted with. I don't see her all the time. And I went to an event and we caught up. 2 weeks later, she called me and she said, I need help with my business.
Was there anything about the definition of weak ties that jumped out at you?
Mark had so many different pearls of wisdom, but if I'm to distill it into things that kind of make sense for me, networking is a great way to actually identify and develop your weak connections. If we always are in the circle of surrounding ourselves with the top 5 people that we know best, as he said, that collapses in on itself. So we do need to branch out, and networking is so good to going out and finding new acquaintances to develop. And whether that's within your industry or potentially it's outside of it into areas that you're actually even just interested in.
A few people listening to the word networking might be thinking, oh, I really prefer just staying in my pajamas and being at home. Networking's a bit icky. There's something a bit maybe even superficial about it. What's your general response to that?
Oh, I like being at home in my PJs too, so I'm not gonna begrudge anybody or cast any aspersions. However, networking is just going and learning. I approach networking not so much in terms of what can I go to take. It's actually, how can I go and be of service to others?
Well, you say networking is largely about finding your tribe. Mm. So what do you mean by finding your tribe?
Well, I think it depends on what your motivations are for networking. If you want to be with organizations that are really sales focused, there's networking groups for that. And that's quite, you know, if I was starting out in business, I would probably be looking at those as well. But where I am now in my career and longevity on this planet, I'm looking for, I know my sweet spot is actually giving value to other business owners about how they can grow and scale their business and just deal with some of the challenges that we've got now.
What do you think about social media, like LinkedIn platforms?
I think they're great, but Lisa, you're on LinkedIn. I've already stalked you. but it's a great way to connect, but I think it's about you have to be genuine. I get a lot of connections that come my way and I kind of go, yep, that person's interesting and I'll accept the connection. And then what happens next is they try and sell me something. That is so disingenuous. You haven't sought to understand what my needs are. You don't know anything about me. If I was to turn this into a positive, I would say reach out via LinkedIn, but seek to understand. Maybe there's some insights that you're wanting from, you know, that you want their opinion on something or you want to share something. Go with that service mentality as opposed to maybe I'll get my next invoice paid.
We're speaking with Wendy Dawson, president of the Melbourne Business Network. So let's talk about in-person networking. What advice can you offer us?
Oh, in-person networking. Before you actually get to the event, there's probably a few things you need to kind of be clear on. What type of event are you going to? Why are you going there? And set yourself some goals. But also you need to be clear on what your elevator pitch is, you know, what problems do you want to solve? What value do you offer people? Be very clear and compelling and concise about who it is that you're hoping to meet and why it is that you want to engage with them. And more importantly, it's more about them than it is, hey, I've got some great features and benefits. Once you're at the event, be curious. People are probably apprehensive. If you're feeling apprehensive, I'm sure there's other people in that group as well that will be apprehensive. But adopt that philosophy that, you know what, everybody is dying to meet me. Okay? And that may not be the truth. That may be the little lie you tell yourself. But there's a subtle shift in mindset in terms of go and meet people. Find out what they do. Get them engaged in conversations around what their recent win is or where they're seeing opportunities in the market. In addition to curiosity, optimism is your superpower. You can even ask them, you know, what's been the best thing about your day?
What if someone's an introvert? What's your advice to introverts?
They're the best. Introverts are the best, all right? They listen better, don't they? People like me, we can be too busy talking, but we may miss some of the things that are being said. Being a good networker is directly linked to your ability to be a good listener.
If you want to expand your work community, then effective networking is the key. I'm talking to Wendy Dawson, president of the Melbourne Business Network. Wendy, do you have a couple of simple networking tips so people can try this?
I do. I think about networking, it's a marathon, not a sprint, but there are things that people can do today that can actually have an impact. So over the next week or so, try this. Just adopt the networking mindset. Go out there, find people, and be optimistic about it. Find out what's happening this week. There's all kinds of events that are going on, whether they're industry-based, occupational-based, or even just subject matter-based. And then you might want to grab one of your good friends and go to an event with a networking buddy, or pull back and think about, who do you admire? Why don't you contact them and go have a coffee? Just seek to understand a little bit more about them, what they've done to be successful. And then lastly, I would say, look at your LinkedIn profile. It's a way to actually promote what it is you do and the problems that you solve, and think about how you can find and identify some of those weak connections and reach out to them. Don't reach out to sell, reach out to share and see what it is you can do to be of service.
Okay, try this and share how it's worked for you. You can email thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. I've been talking to Wendy Dawson, President of the Melbourne Business Network. Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you.
On last week's show, our guest was best-selling author Cal Newport, a computer science professor at Georgetown University. His new book, Slow Productivity: The Lost Art of Accomplishment Without Burnout, advocates for big changes to the way we work. Now, one of Cal's suggestions is setting quotas if you're feeling overwhelmed by a particular type of work, like meetings or client visits, for example. Well, listener Christy decided to try this. Here's what she had to say.
I am definitely guilty of wanting and liking to say yes to many people. And so I tried Cal's quota concept this week. I do a lot of keynote speaking as part of my profession. I talk on the athlete mindset and how to apply that to business and leadership. And a friend of mine from the gym asked me to come and speak to her team for free. She works for charity, it's a nonprofit. And I just said to her, look, I love to help out nonprofits. I have a quota of doing 3 free speeches a year. Unfortunately, I'm already at quota this year, but here's 3 organizations that I know train emerging speakers. Why don't you have a chat to one of them? I'm sure they'll have someone that is happy to like come and speak for free, especially if you give them photos and a testimonial. I was happy. She was super happy. Quotas work.
Brilliant, Christy. Thank you so much. And listener Sally said Cal's advice and insights also helped shape her work life. Take a listen.
Cal's work has been a revelation for me in a couple of ways. One is using time blocking as a technique to create really focused time for deep work, and doing that in a way that really aligns with my own sort of personal working rhythm. I tend to find I work much better in the morning, much more better at focusing and concentrating, getting deep work like book writing, article writing, stuff that takes sort of really deep focus. And I block notifications, make sure I'm not getting interrupted to really be able to synthesize ideas and good stuff like that. Really creating a bit of a routine, dialing in on what works for me, a place that works for me. Honestly, it's been a revelation. Love Cal's work, really interested in his research and his thinking.
Thanks, Sally. You can try this and share how any of this has worked for you. You can email thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Thanks for listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. If you haven't already, search for This Working Life on the ABC Listen app. Tap the heart to follow all of our stories. This episode was produced by Kate Ubergang and engineered by Brendan O'Neill and Tim James. We're on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. Until next time, love your work.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.